Does either of you have any final thoughts?
So as I said at the beginning, it's very important to be able to pinpoint areas of need that are masked by larger areas of data. So my dissertation was done in Harris County, which is Houston, Texas. And one of the health centers that I was working with was in the same zip code as River Oaks, which is the richest part of Houston. So you had a health center serving a nearby neighborhood, but all of the data for the zip code were masked by the very wealthy people that also lived in that zip code. So being able to really pinpoint where the need was by going to sub-zip code analysis was mandatory to really be able to prove need to funders in order to say, this is why you need to start a health center in this area. So pinpointing that need to be able to then make the case to state government or local government for funding, to private funders, that's the key, is really helping funders spend their money well by targeting areas of highest need. And again, going back to what Robert said at the beginning, that's not just based on what need looks like at the area level, but what resources are already there. So if there was already a health center serving this area, we probably don't need to add another one. Or again, looking at sort of these ultra urban areas, you may have high enough need in an area that you do need a second health center in those small areas. But you won't know any of that until you conduct a small area analysis that looks at, you know, community level need based on social determinants of health, that looks at, if you are lucky enough to have access to it, how patients are currently utilizing resources, but also what resources are already there. And one of the things I don't think we touched on is transportation. So transportation helps people move through space if it's there. So we can't rely on public transportation in all areas in our analysis, can't rely on car accessibility in all areas in our analysis. So I think it's important to look at all of the factors that come together to make something accessible to the end user, whether it's having a site there, having transportation that gets me to a site that may be remote from me, having hours that are available. Some of that is just not feasible in small area analysis, but it should be considered. But it's really looking at those three components, social determinants of health or community level data, actual utilization of services and what services are available, I think are the ultimate data that we need to include in small area analysis.
Yeah, you know, Jennifer, you made an interesting point about hours available. You know, access to care is just, you know, just because you have insurance doesn't necessarily mean that you got access to care. If you're working two jobs and, you know, the health center or your doctor closes at 5 o'clock, you may not be able to get to care after five. And I think, you know, as we think about needs, we have to think about the resources, as you said, the resources that are available, but not only do you have a brick and mortar building there, but what are their hours? The other thing that you made me think about as you were talking, and your example about the health center, was where do patients come from? A lot of times, you know, I've done analysis where we've got a health center or a hospital in a very affluent area of a community, and it doesn't look like there's a lot of need there because of the population that's in that community. But then as you look at the population that provider serves, you realize that they're serving a much broader area. And their patients, especially if you're talking about vulnerable populations, may be coming from, especially those underinsured, uninsured, or on Medicaid, maybe a broader area because of the people or the providers that are taking those type of insurances. So again, you know, part of understanding the need is thinking about, especially if you're doing a small area analysis for a health provider, think of not only about that area, but where their patients are coming from.
So just to add on to that, the health center that I was talking about in Houston, it started off serving a neighborhood that was primarily an African-American Black population. And then as the demographics of Texas changed, as many areas across the country have, it became a more Hispanic population. That neighborhood had relative proximity to downtown Houston, so it has recently become gentrified. But the health center is still relevant because people work in that area. And so having a health center where I work is just as important as where I live. And so part of small area analysis, I think, should be looking at people as a whole unit rather than as where they live, because people don't sit at home waiting to go to the doctor. They go to work, they go to school. Well, before the pandemic, they left their home to go to work, go to school. And so you have to look at all those places where people go to evaluate accessibility. I know that we're not talking specifically about accessibility here, but that's something to keep in mind. The other thing that struck me as you were talking about larger areas that places serve is I have a theory that when you do start a new health center, so something that is primarily focused on primary care, and then something that is also primarily focused on meeting a safety net component of the health system. And this may be true generally for primary care, but I haven't theorized beyond the safety net population. But anyway, I think it starts off as a very small area that I'm serving, and over time it becomes very large. And so what we see in the health center in Houston was that it started off, as I said, the neighborhood was primarily a Black African-American community. And then as more Hispanic population moved in, those patients, those original Black African-American patients moved out further, but still that was their health home. And then as that Hispanic population got displaced and it became a gentrified neighborhood, those patients moved out farther. And so what you see is an evolution of service area over time, which means that any small area analysis conducted for that health center over time needs to grow, expand, change to include maybe a much larger area overall, but still those small area data are important to better understand maybe different differences in segments of the population that I'm serving.
That's a good point, because I think you can't just say we do one small area analysis and we're good to go, because over time, the population changes, the type of need changes, and you've got to adapt your small area analysis to ensure you pick up that change.
Exactly. You know, when I was first in grad school and was first exposed to geographic data analysis, I think I was spoiled because we had a grant from a conversion foundation in Louisiana who wanted to better be able to spend their money. And so they had funded this research project that actually did primary data collection for the 69 traditional neighborhoods of New Orleans. And 69 may not be the right number, but the original neighborhood definitions of New Orleans, so that they would be able to say, you know, if a requester came to them and said, I would like to start a maternal and child health clinic in the French Quarter, they would be able to look at their data and say, actually, no, if you want to do maternal and child health, where the need is greatest in New Orleans is in the Irish Channel. Or if what you really want to do is be in the French Quarter, what we really need is aid services, for example. And so that was my introduction to small area analysis, was actually creating the neighborhoods. So because they weren't traditional geographies, we had to create new geographies. And because we were creating new geographies, we had to do the primary data collection. So we did telephone surveys to collect the data, which was amazing and fantastic until you get to the point of data update. Someone has to fund that again. And are the questions the same again? And so that project just died on the vine, because once the funder had their initial set of data, they weren't interested in renewing that. So that's something that you have to keep in mind, is if you are going to do that primary data collection, are you going to be able to maintain this over the years? And so that's, again, one of the reasons I think it's so important to try and ask questions the same way they're being asked in those secondary data sets, so that you have something comparable, and that whatever you're building is maintainable.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You're talking about the phone. And even how you collect data changes over time, as you said. And, you know, if data was collected 15, 20 years ago, a lot more people had landlines. And now less and less people have landlines, you've got to think of another way. Plus, are there specific differences in who has a landline and who doesn't? I mean, in general, the older people still have landlines who even may or may not have a cell phone. So is there some kind of built-in bias as you start collecting the data based on how you collect the data?
And just a funny anecdote, one of my friends in that grad school situation, he always responds to phone surveys, no matter who's calling, because he knows he's one of the few, and he feels he has huge influence because everyone else dodges those surveys. So he feels he has this great influence because he actually responds to every survey that comes his way. And so I think that's very telling. You know, people tend to avoid them. You tend to have very low response rates for those surveys. And so then what is generalizable from that information once you have it?
Oh, good point. I mean, I'm in the same boat. Because I do so much surveys that I tend, if we get a survey, I will answer it just because I know how important it is. But you're right. Then there's a selection bias in there that may be skewed one way or another in terms of the results. So always an issue.
Right. You always have to be super careful with those survey data.
Mm-hmm. And that also makes, adds to the importance of, adding in the demographic questions. So you can kind of, estimate what it would look like, the population would look like once you've collected the data.
One of the interesting things, I don't know if I'm supposed to use proper names in here, but one of our mapping tools is the UDS Mapper, which is a federal contract that the Health Resources and Services Administration has funded us to be able to look at patient data for the federally funded health center program. So where do patients come from to go to these health centers? Where are patients not coming from? And then what's the population data in those same communities so that we can begin to look at need, maybe help make decisions about where the next 5 to 50 health centers end up going. But we are limited in the UDS mapper to using the zip code tabulation area, ZICTA, as the level of geographic analysis because the health centers are reporting their patient data at the zip code level. And so zip codes do not resolve into any other geography. They're actually not even an area. They're just a set of directions to tell the post women and post men how to deliver the mail. So if you're using zip code area data, Robert would have to define what the zip code is. What's the actual area of the zip code? And then MISA would have to do the same thing. And hopefully you would conclude that it was the same geography because there are no official zip code boundaries from the U.S. Postal Service. So a compromise is the zip code tabulation area that the U.S. Census Bureau provides that is an estimation of the area covered by zip codes. But we're at the mercy of the Census Bureau for that. I think Census 2020 is going to give us new zip code tabulation areas, but I'm not 100% certain of that. And so that's something to keep in mind is, there are certain geographies that I think we can count on, but we're relying on the federal government to decide that those geographies continue to be relevant and how they use them. And if the federal government decides that it's not, then some of these geographies go away. And then how do we use the patient data that are very easily available at a zip code level if there's no common geography to use for the comparison to population data?
And to add to that, zip codes actually can be added and subtracted. So I know in New York City, I think after last census or two censuses ago, they split a couple of zip codes and added new ones. So all of a sudden you've got a zip code you can't necessarily match back to older data.
Right. It's not tied to the census. It's just whenever the Postal Service needs them to. So
exactly.
We had that same issue when I was in grad school in Houston, booming suburbs. All of a sudden, tomorrow, there's a new zip code, split a zip code in two and half of it has a new zip code number. Your patient, you're probably not collecting that patient data regularly. So patients may be in new zip codes that you don't even know about. This may actually be relevant also. I was just thinking about it. I was saying how we do our small area estimation at the Research Data Center using the CDC Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System data. We physically have to go to the Research Data Center, and we cannot do that now because of the pandemic.
Oh, interesting.
And so our updated data are delayed because of the pandemic. We're hopeful that they come up with a way to maybe access that virtually, but I'm not sure if that's going to work. So just another thing that if you're relying on primary data collection or small area estimation, it's just availability of the data to do what you need to do. But yeah, so we were very pleased to be invited, and I thank you for including us on your podcast.
Well, thank you.
Again, Jen, thank you for participating in our interview. And Robert, thank you for getting this together.
Thank you for joining our CHWS podcast. This is Maisa Cleaves delivering the most important topics in health workforce research. Please visit our website at www.chwsny.org, where you can find the most recent reports, resources, and projects. Please be sure to tune in for our next podcast.